And he's very repulsive to you many times. And this man perhaps was like this. He certainly was not a spiritual man. He was only a natural man. And he did only what a natural man can do. Now, admittedly, he is a beautiful specimen of a natural man. Nature had done a tremendous lot for this man. It had done a great deal for him. It had raised him up and endowed him with riches. It had endowed him with power. It had given him a noble moral nature independently of God. It had given him attractive personality and several other very noble things. He's a beautiful specimen of a natural man at his very best. You know what? I'm describing some of you right here today. Never have been born again, members of this church, but you've never been born again. And you would dare to believe that God could never discredit you because you're just like this man was. And that man is one splendid example. If anybody's ever going to get through that way, that man will. But Jesus Christ plainly says that he can't. This is a good example of what nature can do for a man. But it's also a good example of what nature cannot do for a man. It cannot build a bridge across this world, between this world and the kingdom of God, so that a person can cross on the basis of nature. He cannot do it. He must be born again. You see, a person's conduct can be regulated in one of two ways, like that watch that I hold on my hand. I could take the face from that watch, and if it had stopped, I could ask you what time it is, and here's all I would have to do to get accurate time for a moment out of that watch. I would just turn the hands around till they conform to what you just told me. Now, that's one way conduct can be conformed to a certain pattern. That's one way to regulate conduct. But it won't last long. I would have to stand there and move that watch at a commensurate pace with the way time is moving. Something's wrong on the inside. The other way to regulate the time of that watch that it shows is to take the works out and operate on the inside and correct the regulator within. Now, which way was this man going? He had taken the face off the watch. And here's what he said to Jesus, in essence. He said, how can I have the watch of my life running accurately? And Jesus might well have responded like this. You know the big clocks downtown that everybody sets their watch by? Take care that you govern that by them. Here's what he might have said. These I observe every day. And then Jesus says, all right, one thing you lack. The works are all fouled up on the inside. Something is wrong at the mainspring, and unless the regulator is adapted to reality, you'll never have the correct time. Now, that's basically what he's saying here. Now, fourthly, notice this man's idolatry. And here's where it gets down to the saddest part. I must tell you, when I read this story this last week, I hurt. I hurt. For the first time, I preached on this several times in my ministry, and for the first time, I feel like I really got to know this young man. And I literally hurt. I felt like my chest would break open. Because I see so many of us that are just the same composite portrait that he had. And Jesus deals with us on exactly the same basis. His idolatry. You see, he and his wealth were in total identification. So that you couldn't tell who owned what. You couldn't tell whether he possessed his possessions or his possessions possessed him. You couldn't tell where one stopped and the other one started. That was the point here. They belonged to each other. This man belonged to his wealth. His wealth belonged to him. Now, he would not have admitted the first thing. He would have said, that belongs to me. But he refused to admit that he had sold himself over to his wealth. But they were identified. That's the reason when Jesus told him negatively what to do, he turned right around and said, now I want to see about your real identification. Once you've gotten rid of that identification, broken that off, now come and follow me. What does that mean? I want you and me to become one so that we belong to each other. I want us to be so identified that you can't tell where I end and you start or where you end and I start. I want you to come and adhere to me like you have cleft yourself under your wealth. Leave that behind. Break off with it. And once you've gone and sold all you had and given to the poor, you come and follow me. That's astounding how many people think that's a standard for everybody. Well, it may be. It could be. Depends on what condition we're in. See, to Herod, Jesus said one thing. To this man, he said another. To Nicodemus, he would have said one thing. To this man, he said another. He's attacking us at the point of our identification and our affection in life. What is absolutely first? If Jesus Christ were to tell you to give up something that is at the center of things in your life, what would you do? What would you do? If he told you to go home and sell your house today, give it all away. Now, the way you know that that's not what he means for everybody is, what would happen if everybody did that? First place, you'd do a disservice to poor people that is incalculable if you did that. That's not what he means at all. What he means is, this is the acid test with this man. This is the point of his idolatry. He says, break off that identification and identify with me. Put a new object in the center of your life. Listen, in every person's life, there is a center around which that life finally, ultimately rotates and revolves. A central facet, a central thing. There is no such thing as an uncentered person. Everybody has a center. And the last battle for you between God and Satan will finally be held over that ground zero point. And if you cannot say, I break that identification and cleave to Christ, you're lost. You've demonstrated that you never had him to start with. So you see, the beginning and the end match when a person knows Christ. That's the reason you know that he who endures to the end shall be saved. It has nothing to do with what happened here, except as it shows the outcome of what happened here. And that's the way you know this man's idolatry. I remembered this last week and went back and researched it, the story of the great conqueror of India whose name was Mahmud. Mahmud of Ghazni, he's known to history. He conquered with his army most of India, almost all of it. And there they were marching across India, just ransacking everything in front of them. And they came finally to the fabulously wealthy city, one of the richest cities of India, named Gujarat. And he went into the Brahmin temple. And he made it his policy to smash all religions and all idols in his pathway, to break the hold of the people on their religion and the hold of their religion on them, so that he could more easily subject them to his authority. And he went into the Brahmin temple, and right inside, standing there in full view from every angle, there was a 15-foot high, gleaming white marble statue, the symbol of their religion. He called for his officers. The magistrates of the city gathered on all sides of the temple, on the inside, the people around outside, anticipating what he was going to do. He allowed the magistrates to crowd the walls inside so that they could see what he had done. And he called for his officers to bring their battle axes, and he gave the command to destroy that idol. The Brahmins immediately fell down on their faces in front of him, and they began to beg, "Not our God, not our God, because the wealth of the city depends on him and our relationship to him. Please do not destroy this idol." And he wavered and he wavered and wavered, and finally he gave the command. And here's what he did. He grabbed the battle axe out of the hand of the nearest officer, swung it around in a full arc around his body, and smashed it into the middle of that idol. And it began to topple. When his officers saw that, they came in and descended on the idol with their battle axes and smashed it to pieces. And to their dismay, the thing was completely hollow on the inside. And there was a fabulous wealth, a treasury of beautiful gems, valuable gems, that came swimming out into the light, just descending onto the floor and bouncing in all directions when they smashed that idol. When I read that story, the moral came home to my heart. How many of us have idols in our lives, which if we spare, will forfeit the treasures of God? And only that man who breaks down that last idol will know the treasures of God. Nobody else will ever know them. This man was a man of idolatry. I remember having a professor of evangelism when I was in seminary. And over again he made this statement. Listen carefully. He said, "Young men, always remember that the battle for a human soul will finally be fought around one sin." And he was right. The battle for every human soul will finally be fought. There may be 1,000 sins there, but it'll reduce finally to one sin. He was right. This man could not give up his attachment, his identification with his treasure. Now the last thing is the incompleteness of this man. Jesus said, "One thing thou lackest." You see, he had much, but he lacked everything. What a paradox that is. He had much, but he lacked everything. He lacked one thing, but that